name is James Simpson. It's on the wall, so I don't forget. Just joking. And I work at Rock Solid Refuge. I'm the counselor there. And we are a program for 13 to 18-year-old adolescent young men. And we've been going on for about 14 years, Rock Solid Refuge. We've been a year-long program for about 11. So that's what I do. If you have any more questions, you can come to the booth and we can talk. This is my beautiful assistant, my wife, Julie. So she's going to be doing the PowerPoint while I talk. So depression. What comes to mind when you think of this word? Come on in.
Hopeless.
Yeah.
Unmotivated.
Unmotivated, yeah.
Life out of control.
Lack of meaning.
Feeling numb.
Yeah.
Tired.
Absolutely. Is it a hard word to talk about? Yes, no?
Yeah.
Both.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Until you start getting on top of it.
In some cases, there's a stigma with this word. You ever heard these words? Just get over it. You know, like, I mean, well, what's your problem? It's not that bad. How long are you going to stay this way? What's wrong with you? So, the words that are attached to this word changes the whole dynamic of said word. And so these are some of the things that we're going to walk through, you know, this afternoon. So depression, what is it? Everyone feels down in the dumps. Bummed out or sad at times, being in a bad mood for a few days is natural. Gloomy, unhappy feelings are part of life, and they usually pass. I mean, I'm sure I can ask you, have you ever had a day that sucked? Most of you would put up your hand. I mean, that's fair. Yet. But sometimes the mood hangs on, affecting your emotions, body, thoughts, and behavior. Maybe you're unable to get out of bed and face the day. You feel like you're falling into a deep dark hole with no way to climb up. Experts call this mental state of depression. So it stays, it lingers, it holds, it grips. And you wonder why I cannot move on. Sounds familiar? Yeah. It's hard. And for many years, people would just use those other words like get over it, move on, what's wrong with you? So, but it's okay to not be okay. Now that might sound controversial, but it's okay to be not okay. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, that this is what Jesus died for. So here's a question. What does it do? Okay. What does depression do to you? I mean, we're talking about something, so why don't you teach me? What does depression do?
Shuts you down?
Makes you feel awful.
Affects your relationships,
absolutely.
Affects your experiences.
Mood swings,
yeah.
Loss of appetite,
yes.
You become lethargic,
yeah.
It completely distorts your thinking and creates feelings of failure and disappointment where everything is negative and sad. It's like walking through sludge, slowing you down and causing you not to want to move forward.
So,
folks are describing what it, you know, what it is and what it does. Depression can be debilitating. It can also cloud your judgment and impair your ability to see solutions. What are likely temporary problems? It's kind of like this. You get up in the morning and there's Mount Everest in front of you. And you just feel that I just can't. I can't. Not because I don't want to, but because if I could get out of bed, I would. And it's almost along the lines of that if you try to get up, it seems that there's chains around your whole entire body and you cannot breathe. That if you could have air, it just seems to be sucked out of the room and there's nothing. The only thing you can do is just dig a hole, lie in it, and grab the biggest rock and put it on top. And it hurts. What does it do? Distorts thinking. You have that. Create feelings of failure. Creates negative, sad thoughts. It's debilitating, paralytic. Causes impairment in everyday life. Absolutely. Yeah. Affects judgment. Affects the here and now. Affects decision making. Basically affects everything. And some people, well-meaning, they say just get over it. You know, sometimes we have the wrong thinking in regards to this subject. Sure, you might have friends, you might have relatives. And sometimes you may even feel so powerless to help them, you don't know how you can move them forward. And I get it. It is not easy. So symptoms of depression. Hopeless outlook, loss of interest, increased fatigue, sleep problems, insomnia, anxiety. I mean, depression does not cause anxiety, however they are related. That's just where the breathing comes in. Irritability in general. Changes in appetite, weight, uncontrollable emotions, suicide tendencies, cutting themselves, isolation and shutting down. Wow, you guys can just go most of the way. Maybe I should be sitting there and you guys should be teaching me. First time I personally encountered depression was with my my family. Like I grew up in an alcoholic family. Addiction was rampant. First time that I realized that something was wrong was when I was maybe five, where my mom and dad, you know, used to argue and they used to fight, and my dad used to go to work and then my mom would lie down. And then she would lie down for the rest of the evening. And I'm thinking, I go to other people's houses, how does this work? My mom was hospitalized because of major clinical depression. And then as someone who was younger to try to understand that in an addicted family, it became hard for me to sort of like walk things forward. Perhaps the greatest difficulty was a sense of hopelessness that I did not know what to do. And I did not know how to move forward and I did not know how to help. I was so powerless that I felt physically weak sometimes. And before I knew it, depressed feelings entered into my life. There's a difference between powerlessness and hope. But in the midst of difficulty, in the midst of pain, we lose the most important part of moving forward in depression, and that is hope that tomorrow will be better than today. And I know those words, may seem like so far away, but it is crucially important that, whether you struggle with this or whether you have friends, that the most important thing that you can do is give people hope. And that means that you will need to get involved. Anxiety symptoms, nervousness, restlessness, feeling tense, feelings of danger, panic or dread, rapid heart rate, rapid breathing. Increased or heavy sweating, trembling or muscle twitching, trouble focusing clearly about anything than what you are thinking about. So, depression and anxiety and you know, and you might wonder, you know, like, I mean, wow. It's tough. It's hard. And so it's okay to admit that it's hard. It's okay to realize that, I mean, that man, I don't know what to do, and that's okay. I mean, that's why some of you are here, and you know, and that's why, you know, you need to understand is that, I mean, in of ourselves, we may not have all the answers, but we're going to have some. Depression can happen to anyone. Causes a variety of serious symptoms and can affect anyone at any time, no matter who you are, what you look like, or where you live. People young or old can be depressed. People of every race, gender, ethnic heritage, and religion can be depressed. Even the rich, famous, or successful can go through depression. It affects everyone. Everyone. No one is immune. No one. Just because a person looks like they have it all together doesn't mean that they do. And just because they're rich, just because they're famous, just because they have the good house, the white picket fence, 2.5 children, car, or whatever, kids look great, but anyone can be depressed or struggle with depression. It's not something that affects a few people. It can affect many. So here's something that as I work with my teenage boys and just listening and talking to people. So this is something to kind of help you understand certain things that you go through. Go ahead. So I call it the depression triangle. First of all, there's trauma. Trauma can be anything, anytime, any place, anywhere, attached to people, places, or things. It's something which has affected them or you. Now, that can be small, it can be big. It could be even a word which somebody says that, I mean, you might remember when you were younger, you drew a picture and someone says, wow, that sucks. That could be traumatic for you. Sometimes you go through an illness and it's traumatic. Trauma is something that personally affects you. There's no necessary amount of weight. It's something that is pressing upon you. So it's trauma. That leads to negative thoughts. Something happens and then all of a sudden it's like, wow, something negative enters your mind. Then inevitably it goes to a need to escape. Because we do not want to deal with this. And we certainly don't want to deal with this. Make sense? So here's the issue that, I mean, sometimes we do. We spend way too much time here. Well, we need to spend time here. Sure, we can deal with these, that's fine. And 5 years later, you'll still be dealing with these, but what needs to be done is the trauma, which has affected each and every one of us, not only, but it's also affected others. You ever heard this scenario that a church is supposed to be a hospital? Sometimes it feels more like a battleground. It just does. And how many of you in youth group? Yeah. Youth group is supposed to be a safe place. Sometimes it ain't. And so where do you go? I mean, we need support. We need connection. Trauma is a response to a deeply distressing or disturbing event that overwhelms an individual's ability to cope, causes feelings of helplessness, diminishes their sense of self, and their ability to feel the full range of emotions and experiences. So here's a picture. Just They say that, I mean, trauma in some cases is the window to the soul. Well, you ever heard that? I mean, there's all kinds of experiences which affect us. It is what you do not see that is the real issue. Remember this picture? It was very, very quick. Go ahead. It's what you don't see. It's something which affects us. And that's what we need to face. I mean, I can tell you stats upon stats about, you know, about depression. I can talk about, you know, the healthcare system. But I mean, over the last couple of years, this has become a major issue with people not being able to understand, well, you know, what's going on, with individuals being, being freaked out. I mean, you know, is tomorrow going to be better than today? Like, you see that this mass situation is going on and on and on. And there's no easy answers. I mean, there isn't. And I wish I could give you, a whole bunch of information and say, just do it and everything's going to be fine. That's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to pass on information which I believe will help you. But one of the biggest things you're going to need is community. And I know that's tough. Because over the last 2 years, have we had community? No, we've had a lot of isolation. So, here's a negative thought cycle. I am worthless. I don't care. No one cares. So, loss of self, loss of passion, and loss of community. That's how negative thoughts affect us. Because we are not on our own. I mean, when we screw up, I mean, it affects us, right? Because we question our sense of worth. Yeah. What does the Bible tell us about our worth? Anyone?
That we're worthy just because we exist, because we're made in the image of the Creator.
Exactly. We are touched by the Creator. It's the painting. You were hand painted by the Creator. So, I mean, we're not worthless. God does care. You know, and other people care. Yeah, when we get into this cycle, it totally affects us and pulls us away from who we are and what God has asked us to do. We isolate. Then there's no way out. So, there was a study made by this doctor, and he published his theory on suicide. And there were two things which people found when he put out this study, is that I'm alone, and I am a burden. And this gets at the heart of who we are. Because when we feel depressed, or when we have depression, we feel that we are so alone, that no one cares, that no one matters. You know, and then we feel like, man, there's got to be something wrong with me. You ever felt that way? And it hurts. It hurts to know that you think that even though you can sit in church for like 10 years or something, and you know the guy up front, you know your youth pastor, you know your youth sponsor, or whatever, and you know that people love you, but for some reason you believe that that is not true. And that is when negative thoughts affect you. It seems like it is like an endless loop of listening to ABBA all the time. It's awful. It's terrible. You can laugh. It's okay. I know. Just saying, I thought I brought out ABBA. Unfortunately, brought out a new album. I thought most of them were dead, but apparently not. I'm torturing my life even more. I get depressed thinking about it. No, just kidding. But it's hard. It is. So it's isolation, it's devastating to the human psyche. This is why solitary confinement is considered the cruelest of punishments. At the heart of humankind's existence is a desire to be intimate and to be loved by one and to be loved by another. You want to feel love. You want to feel that we are part of a community. And I get that. And that is true. And that is why isolation is so hard. Because it pulls us away from that community. And that's why it's been so increasingly difficult for the last 2 years. Because even if you want community, you have to be like 6 feet, 12 feet away. So here's something. Kids, youth don't really want to die. They just want the pain to stop. And somebody is so depressed, I'm going to give you this point so that, I mean, it will help you understand it, because, I mean, that's when you walk somebody through something. This is a important way to understand is that it's the pain they need to stop. It's pain that is controlling them. It's pain that is moving them forward. Why do I say this? I told you about my mom. So when I was 10 years old, my mom and dad had a big fight. So bad that my dad had dragged my mom across the road by her hair, threw in the house. And, you know, and my mom said, "That's it, Jim, I've had enough." My dad went to the pub to have a pint and then on to work, and then went upstairs with my mom. She grabbed her auntie van, she grabbed the Valium, she grabbed the whiskey bottle, down the whole wall. Then went downstairs on the floor, and I said, "Are you okay?" And she says, "Yeah." And I went and told my dad, and my dad, he says, "She'll be fine." And then he went to the pub. The next morning, I woke up. My mom was gone. She was gone. And that sucked. Talk about feeling pain and agony. I felt pain and agony, and I took it out on everyone in my neighborhood. Because I couldn't cope. I didn't know how to cope. My mom was so much in pain that she took the only way out which she thought was possible. She left. And I felt abandoned, and I felt worthless, and I hurt. I was so angry that I went into a field and I screamed at God. And I said, "How could you do this to me? What have I ever done?" I said, "So get ready, it's World War III between you and I, and I will make you suffer." Because I was in pain. And I was in agony. That's my Bible here. I'm going to read you something, see if you like. It's found in Psalm 6. "Have compassion on me, Lord, for I am weak. Hear me. Heal me, Lord, for my bones are in agony. I am sick at heart. How long, O Lord, until you restore me? Return, O Lord, and rescue me. Save me because of your unfailing love. For the dead do not remember you. Who can praise you from the grave?" Here's the part. "I am worn out from sobbing. All night I flood my bed with weeping, drenching it with my tears. My vision is blurred by grief. My eyes are worn out because of all my enemies." Sounds familiar? Yeah. So even back in the day, they understood. You ever read the book of Job? I mean, you talk about a depressed dude. Yeah, that guy's got some major depression. That's right, I wrote a paper on it. I think he got an A. Thanks, Job. But I mean, this is not something that I mean is conducive to here. It happens. And if we can't talk about it, if we don't open up about it, I mean, I understand we need safe places. I get that. But admitting that we're hurt, admitting that we're not okay, that is the first step to recovery. So here's the need to escape spell, pain, self-harm, and release. I want it to stop. So, any questions, any questions, any comments, because I don't want to move too far. I just want to know anything from you folks. Is this resonating? No, yes. Because I don't want to move super fast. So my last thing I did, I moved fast, but I've done it stuff through a code. Just make sure you're okay.
Sorry, yes.
Okay.
I think that Job is a good book to read also. By the end of all of that, he ends up getting good.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for that. So we need to look at this. How do people self-harm? Because this is part of depression. This is what people do. So I work with adolescent boys, and I have worked with girls. It's very, very interesting that it used to be only a girl situation, right? But now it's changed. How do individuals self-harm? Do not eat or drink, cutting, burning, erasing marks, weight gain or weight loss, punching or hitting themselves, substance abuse, poisoning themselves, excessive exercising, thrill-seeking, binge eating, wearing little clothes or more depending on weather. These are symptoms of people who struggle with their emotions, with what's going on inside. Here is a quote from Dr. Mark Penner's book. Later this afternoon, I'll be sitting down to what I know will be another deep and painful conversation with Kelly. She's 16 and describes her life as totally screwed right now. My sense is that she's probably right. The text message I got from her late last night said it all. I cut again tonight. I tried not to. Can you please help? Please don't give up on me. Difficult. Sometimes we wonder, is it possible to move forward? How can I help others? One thing I want to give to you is that your pain, your agony can be used to help others. Maybe you've heard that, maybe you don't understand that, but what you've gone through is significant to you and it's significant to God, because He can use that as you pour into someone's heart and you pour into someone's life. But I know some people may not feel like that. I know it hurts. I understand, because when my mom left, it was like as if somebody had ripped out my heart and put it on the ground. And I was standing there watching, and I'm going, there's nothing I can do. I can't change past. But what you can do is you can take that pain, and as God enters into that, he can give you the ability to speak to people who others probably can't. Because I was an emotional wreck. And I didn't know how to cope, so I didn't. Because I wouldn't face life. Because the only thing I could see is what I had lost. So I went to church in England, absolutely. I listened. It was great. And Jesus died for my sins and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, where's my mom? 4 years later, my dad drank himself to death. I was angry and I had rage. And I'm thinking, you exist, God. You're pretty pathetic at running the universe. Ever shouted at God? Ever railed at God? Yeah. Many people said we shouldn't do that. But if you read the Psalms, read Job, mean, there's times where you have to have a conversation with God. You absolutely do. And many people say, well, can we ask him why? Yes, you can ask him why. Absolutely. There are a plethora of explanations as to why people and individuals take this road. However, there are two common factors, to feel and not to feel. Some desire to feel something other than what is going on in the right now, and others desperately want to know what is going on in the right now. Each person has their reasons for cutting. The old thing was to feel and not to feel. When I'm going to speak with individuals about this subject, it seems to be, you know, for them is a mass of shame, a mass of like, I failed. Remember one of the people who I spoke to, they had scars all down their arms. Yeah, the very interesting thing about this individual is that he decided that he wasn't going to wear long shirts anymore, that he was going to show his scars. I said, is that difficult? And he says, yeah, some days it is, because I have to answer questions. He says, are you okay with that? He says, I'm better now. And so when people are in darkness, they will do these type of things, as we've read and as we've learned. But that doesn't mean that, you know, we can't be involved. It doesn't mean that we can't help them and work with them. At the core, to feel or not to feel does not make the issue disappear. It's a temporary solution to a long-term problem. The act of cutting is an escape mechanism as to what is really happening inside. It's like the iceberg theory. The Titanic did not sink because of what it saw. The Titanic sank because of what it didn't see. And that would be trauma. Everyone has trauma. And those are the things that we have to understand. So questions, comments, discussion.
Really enjoy the book of Job, its approach, how Job just rests with God in relationship. Job's friends had all the right theological answers. Job was borderline blasphemous, but God was happy with Job because we actually conversed with God rather than talking about God. That really helped me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is, you know, that is amazing. Absolutely 100%, right? I mean, talking, conversing. Does anyone journal? Yeah. Write about your thoughts. Put them down on paper because then you can see how far you've come.
And I think another book that you can look at is Lamentations.
Lamentations, yeah.
Like when I read Lamentations, and it might not even be meant to be read this way, but I think as a journal entry, sort of, in a sense, it's like, because it's not written that long, they're just grieving and kind of. Because sometimes you need to get that up, and if you can't get it up to a person, even just writing something down and just having it be in something physical can help something else.
Escape spiral. I believe that the desire to die is fundamentally a desire to stop the intolerable pain. But the sources of these pain are complex. So as you walk through, you know, these situations with people, is to understand that it's just never one thing. It could be, but more often than not, it's something different. I mean, that when I was younger, it took me to see a child psychologist. I don't know why. But I went to see a child psychologist because they thought there was something like really, you know, really wrong with me. And I was diagnosed with what is called a chemical imbalance. So, you know, that's according to science, that my brain doesn't
work right. You know, my serotonin levels are, you know, all mixed up. So I was also diagnosed ADHD, which of course doesn't help matters. Because if things don't work right, then people are like crazy. But I wasn't crazy. Here's the thing. It wasn't just one thing with me, and it's not one thing with, you know, with others. It's not like as if you have the bullseye and you hit that bullseye and everything's fine. It's not. It is a process. It is a journey. And if you walk with someone, it's not just hearing, you know, about that specific issue. There's going to be others. And I wish I could give you, like, the number one thing in regard to helping in the individuals. It is complex. So if you're kind of wondering, like, I can't figure things out, well, like, you mean sometimes they can't figure themselves out. Like, I work with adolescents, and trust me, I mean, it is difficult. Because ask how are you feeling? I'm feeling great. Then 10 minutes later, like, you suck. Okay, that turned around pretty quick. So how can they help? It's perhaps the best question you can ask someone when they are struggling. Say, how can I help? Any questions? Any comments? So what to do? Engage, recognize, and communicate. How do you engage? By spending time, getting involved, by being personal. Presence. And when you bring presence, you don't have to say anything. You can sit there. You may say, well, I don't know what to say, then fine. Then sit there with someone who's struggling, with someone who's hurting. Because sometimes you may not have all the answers. But the point of you being there simply means, you know, that you're there to walk along with them. And in that moment, you're experiencing, in some cases, you know, what they're experiencing. And that creates a bond. That creates, you know, a love. That creates a care, which they desperately need, because sometimes we say way too much when we just need to be quiet. Also, you can try asking open-ended questions. Like, for instance, like, how was your day? As opposed to tell me about your day. How did your math test go? Saying, did it really? Like, it was awful. I don't know. But how you speak with them, and you go, tell me what was difficult about your testing. By listening and not lecturing. As much as we may want to give people the answers, the key thing is just to listen to them, just let them talk. I mean, there's sometimes where I sit with people and I just let them talk. Let them talk. Because they need to do those type of things. What do people need? People need connection. They need intimacy. And they need to know that they're valuable. And intimacy isn't just like physical. Intimacy is far more than that. It is biological, psychological, sociological, and spiritual. Intimacy is. It's about being able to share when you are broken. It's about being able to walk with someone, you know, when you are vulnerable. And it's also about taking off that mask and being who you truly are with them. People crave intimacy. Why do you think they crave intimacy? Not what Hollywood teaches you, because that's all about physical. Why do people crave intimacy?
It's what we were created for.
Because it's actually about relationship. It's what it's about. It's about relationship.
I mean, I don't know how many of you have gone to church, but I mean, Jesus was a pretty relational guy. It was all about relationships. I mean, that's why he tells stories. That's why he helps us understand and walk through situations. I mean, that's why he was always trying to build relationship in the Bible all the time. It was 12, 3, and then 1. 12 disciples, then the 3, and then the 1 is important to John. But it's all about relationship. Even relationship with the Pharisees, trying to help them understand certain things. Even the people who he walked with and cried with and loved, it was all about relationship. We crave relationship. We need relationship. While connection may not be our top need for immediate physical survival, our Creator has formed us in such a way that there is nothing more crucial to our long-term welfare. In fact, virtually every action we humans take is part of the deeper attempt to connect with other humans, even when it terrifies us. Crave relationship. Like I use this illustration in my other session today, it's very, very interesting because youth grade, I mean, I think the number is like 1,100 people. And all of a sudden, like when it came to worship, everyone comes to the front. No one really knows a lot about people. I mean, it doesn't matter whether they wash their hair or they had deodorant on or brush their teeth. I mean, when it's worship time, everyone's there and they're all doing their thing or jumping up and down or whatever and doing all that. I mean, so all automatically we are in essence, a relationship. I mean, all these people are together in praising and worshiping God. But that's what people need. That's what people crave. And when people become depressed and, you know, and have depression, in some way, shape, or form, relationship has been fractured. We crave for relationship. And when we move away from that, it impacts us severely. But I remember when my mom and dad left, it hurt because it was piece of me which I would never have again. And it shattered and it broken. And I get that. But if we think that we can walk away from relationship, we can't. Because that's who we are. That's what we want. That's what we desire. In essence, we long for it. We long. It's why it hurts when we're pulled away from that. And I know relationships are risky. They are. But we long for them. All of us do. We long to be part of a community. Recognize that there will be struggle, that it may take time, that this is not all there is, and that they will need help. Recognize that. Said, I wish I could give you a quick fix. I can't. I mean, it is a process. And you will see progress some days and some days you won't, even in your own life, even in your own heart. But it is a process. Some days will be better than others. So some days will be tough. Some days will be great. Some days won't be great. Some days you'll grab your pillow and scream in it because everything sucks. And then the next day, I mean, you know, you're moving forward. But in that moment, that is not all there is. It may feel like it, but there's hope. This is a picture taken at Rock Salt Refuge. I mean, it was a day where the snow was blowing and things like that, and you could barely see anything that was a sunrise. Child psychologists affirm that every child has a certain basic emotional needs that must be met if he or she is to be emotionally stable. Among these emotional needs, none is more basic than the need for love and affection, the need to sense that he or she belongs and is wanted. That is wanted. That you belong and you want it. And when that's fractured, you believe that, I mean, and others believe that, that I don't feel right. know, that I need a sense of belonging in relationship, you know, and I'm wanted. Does that resonate? Yeah. Communicate that you care, that you love, that they matter, and that there is hope. There's hope not because we bring hope, but because someone who is far more, you know, amazing than Jesus brings hope. And I know it's difficult, but trust me, I've had my arguments with God. I get it. I know how you feel, like God, like if I was running the universe, things would be a lot better. I mean, there's some days like that. Like I arrogantly said that to God. And I'm like, what am I thinking? Like, he was more one time. I was so angry and so mad that I used to scream in my pillow and say, God, this is your fault. This is your fault. I mean, why did this happen? Why? Just to scream for years and years. Then I realized it wasn't God's fault. God did not make my parents leave. They chose. And I had a choice. As difficult as it was, am I going to move? Am I going to move forward? Am I going to trust that God does know what he's doing? That, you know, that God cares, that he loves, you know, that my relationship with him matter, and that there is hope. There's one thing that the empty grave proves, is that there's hope. And I know some days it may say like, man, today doesn't feel like a hopeful day. But we keep moving forward. Keep trusting in him. We keep trusting in people who we bring into our circle, and we walk with them and they walk with us each and every day. Same picture, same day, a lot clearer, a lot better. Beautiful sunset. Land of the open skies. Here's a quote from someone who lived a long time ago, Francis of Assisi. Start by doing what's necessary, then do what's possible, and suddenly you are doing the impossible. He was a Franciscan. He was the founder of the Franciscan monks. And as he lived his life, you know, and as he walked forward in difficult circumstances on earth, that he recognized that, I mean, this is, you know, this is true. Do what's necessary, and do what's possible, and suddenly you find yourself moving forward in realms and places where you probably haven't even considered that you could walk in. So any questions, any comments? Anything you want to teach others?
I got a piece of scripture. When I was a student, I also helped me quite a bit. It's where two or more are gathered, in the Spirit of God dwells there among them. And I think that really shows the importance of relationships with not just him, but other people.
There's the concept of the wounded healer as well. Yes. And I think Jesus, we don't often look to him as the wounded healer, but he was wounded for us and for our sake and helped heal us. And we often disregard our own wounds as a vessel to heal and to help other people. And we don't see that our struggles sometimes are also our light and our strength. So even what you're sharing today, it's very much you are being used as a healing vessel with your wounded story, and that's just phenomenal. When we come together, we can hear that. So thank you.
I think we see Jesus do that too. Like, he never cursed the people that were getting crucified. He didn't curse the people. He didn't, even though it was like the most worst relationship he could be in, he didn't destroy it. He never really destroyed any relationship with Jesus. But it's too valuable.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's a band, and it's I think it's I Am They, and it's over. I'm thankful for the scars. and thankful for the scars. I know some days you may not feel like that, but I mean, one day, the scars will shine. And you'll be able to help others. So if you would ask me years ago, could I stand up and say in these things, I'd say, you offer, you offer. You know, I work with a lot of addicts. I say, you know, what are you smoking? Like, that's not possible. I'm a wreck. I'm a mess. I mean, I can barely even get up and go to school. Like, yeah, I was awful in high school. Pathetic. But I didn't know how to move forward. And then one guy came into my life, the name of John, who loved me and cared for me. You know, and he said these words. He goes, James, he said, I'm going to tell you something. He says, God is going to use you in ways that you cannot possibly imagine. He said, but here's the thing. You don't think that he can, because I'm not going to stand in your way. And he says, just trust him. Just trust him. And it was hard.
When's the appropriate time to go just from friendship to bring in from counselor, professional, whatever?
Yeah.
When it's critical depression.
Yeah.
That magic opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's an interesting question because I mean, and I get that, and so what I do when I come to the end of everything that I know, and I go and ask others, and when I've come to the, you know, when I've come to the end of them, then that's when I call in, you know, in a professional, because I always make sure that I consult if I need to, because I don't want to pull the trigger like quick, because that ends up being difficult because you get someone else involved, and they're like, well, they go, well, you think I'm crazy? Well, I don't think you're crazy. I just think you need help. You know, and it's hard because automatically part of the problem is that as we deal with depression, there's always this word, right? Because people automatically think that you're crazy, and you're not. It just hurts. And so, like, when you come to the end of what you know and you go and ask someone else, you know, and go to like a counselor or a guidance counselor or a pastor or someone else, and they're at the end, you know, and then they don't know, then you go and ask, then you go and consult someone who is, you know, who is a psychologist, psychiatrist or something like that. I mean, that's what I do. I mean, and that seems to, you know, that seems to help. I mean, because I know I don't know everything. I mean, I have my story and I get it. I can recognize some things, but it doesn't mean that I can take them into places because other people have gifts and abilities that perhaps I don't have. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Anything else? Okay,
good
if
job,
not,
James.
What?
Good job.
Okay, let me pray with you guys. Okay, let me pray. Father, as we come before you, we want to say thank you for your love, your grace, and your mercy. And Lord, we know that this subject is tough, it's hard. And Father, there's so many times where we feel overwhelmed. There's so many times where we don't know, you know, which way to go. But we thank you for you who knows us intimately. We thank you that you give us wisdom and you give us guidance. And Father, and you know, we just pray that we'd link arms with people who struggle. You know, Lord, that we will walk with them. And even in our own hearts and even in our own lives, you know, when we are, you know, may we reach out to others. May we, you know, walk in that relationship. May we engage and may we understand and may we continue to walk forward, you know, with you. And Father, just thank you for, you know, for everything you've done this weekend. Continue to pray that the Holy Spirit would be here, you know, that you'd move people forward. And we know that this discussion and all the discussions which are happening here, you know, aren't finished, but we just pray that in the midst of us not understanding what's going on, in the midst of our pain and agony, may we invite you into it. May you give us everything that we need and the boldness to help others. And when we hurt, may you carry us. For I ask these things in Christ's mighty name. Amen. Thank you.